Barbara Pratt LeMahieu is being interviewed as a member of the Women's Overseas Service League of San Antonio Unit, Texas. This is January the 14th, 2004, and the recording is being made at the Army Residence Community. Ruth Stewart is the interviewer, assisted by Carol Hapgood and Jim LeMahieu. Barbara, tell me a little bit about your early life. Like, where were you born and where did you grow up?
Salem, Massachusetts.
Okay.
26 August 1930.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you grew up there then?
Yes. Went to grammar school at the St. Mary's Catholic School and as well high school.
Mm-hmm. And then what did you do after high school?
I worked at what's the name of the place? Almy's, which was a department store. Almy's department store, and I worked in the credit department.
Okay, is that where you got your start at administrative experience?
Well, I went through the high school.
You did a business course then?
It was called
then.
A commercial.
Okay.
High school.
So that prepared you for that then.
Yes, uh-huh.
So then when did you get interested in joining the military?
I always was. And I read in the newspaper. I read newspapers, still do, every day. And Salem, Massachusetts, Express, whatever it was. At any rate, I had a good job. And I enjoyed the credit department work. I interviewed the customers and filled out the forms.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a very responsible job.
It was, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Those were times when people that could do did mm-hmm. were encouraged to.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I was reading the morning paper, and they said we were enlisting the United States has been enlisting women for the first time since World War II. And so I said, oh, I'll join the Navy. The Navy age limit was 21, and I wasn't 21. So a couple of days later, they said the U.S. Air Force is recruiting an age that I was eligible for.
And what year was that?
Let's see. December 3, 1948.
Okay. And so that's when you went into the Air Force?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It had just separated.
From the Army?
From the Army.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I was in enlisted status until July 1971. No, that's wrong, too.
But you enlisted as an enlisted person.
Yes, and
you went in as a buck private, did you?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then okay. The Air Force changed the nomenclature. I read in the paper that they were recruiting women for the U.S. Air Force,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which had been separated from the Army Air Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, come on over.
Mm-hmm.
So I
did you do the same kind of administrative work there that you, similar to
yes,
what you'd done in?
Yes, well, I first had to go through basic training
mm-hmm.
and then Cheyenne, Wyoming for administrative training.
Mm-hmm.
And I was assigned to Colorado Springs headquarters. What was it? It was Air Force headquarters. No. What's his name, the general?
Sack? LeMay?
It's LeMay, yes.
Okay.
And I went to the service at Colorado Springs, and later with the, when the Korean War developed, they reassigned headquarters to March Air Base, March Air Force Base
in California. 15th Air Force.
15th Air Force, yeah.
Okay, then, and, but you spent quite a bit of time then in Colorado Springs, did you? Until the Korean War?
Until they changed, they closed Colorado Springs and moved the headquarters to March Air Base in California.
Okay, and you went to California,
oh,
then
yeah.
You followed it there.
Yeah.
Since that was during the Korean War, did you go to Korea at all?
Not then. They were not sending women to Korea. They were nurses
but
that
not,
went to Korea, but okay. not administration.
So what kind of work were you doing then in the, at SAC?
I was a secretary in what was called not public relations then. What was it called?
But similar to public relations,
well, that's,
was
that's
it?
The
that
area.
Type of work, yeah.
And we, not, I didn't, but I, my boss was a major who was promoted to lieutenant colonel, and one of the duties was to publish the weekly newspaper. So I did that too. And then, let's see. We skipped a whole long.
This is next. OCF.
Yeah, then I, when they started recruiting for Air Force enlisted people to go to OCS.
Oh.
When we're separated from the Army.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 1952. And I graduated 52C was the designation, which was the third of four commission and assigned to Montana.
So that was as a second lieutenant or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Which was a MATS base at the time.
And well, that was quite an accomplishment then to get through OCS.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was hard work, but.
Did you go from, well, let's go back. It was hard work. What did they ask of you to do in the OCS?
Well, in the first place, I was in class with people who were college graduates, almost all, and which had been a requirement. But when they opened it up because of Korea, and I was taking off-duty education courses all the time at the local colleges. So.
But what kind of courses did you have to go through? Was it like
administrative
yeah, kinds of things?
Yeah,
accounting and bookkeeping, or
well, I had
personnel.
That
all
I had,
that.
Had worked with that sort of thing at in civilian life. So I just fell into it.
And how was that a year course? A 1 year?
Oh no, not the admin thing.
No, I mean the OCS.
Right at a year, nine months, 10 months?
Close to that anyway.
20 weeks? 24 something. Weeks, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Can't remember exactly.
And then did, when you got out, then you went, you told me where you went from there, but I forgot.
Well, after I graduated from OCS, which was class 52C. I was assigned to Montana, Great Falls, Montana, which
Great
was the MATS base and had been. And I stayed in the...
What was your position there? What did you do there?
I was in what was it called? It wasn't called public relations.
Public information?
Yes, public information, yes. PIO.
Okay.
My boss was the PIO.
Okay.
Of several bosses. And then, lo and behold, I read in the Air Force Times they were recruiting for women to go through the first classes of OCS.
Hmm.
And I
Before that, though.
Yeah.
Before that.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And I went, finished OCS, and I was assigned to Great Falls, Montana.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in 1955, I volunteered to go to Tokyo, where the headquarters.
That was
1955. 55. In Tokyo. What the heck was the name of it? Oh, FIF. That's right. Far East Air Force.
Where?
FIF. In Tokyo.
Okay.
That was a command.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Command.
Okay.
And then they moved the headquarters to Hawaii.
Well, while you were in, how long were you in Tokyo then?
I think 2 years, wasn't it?
Quite a while.
55. Three.
Two.
Two plus.
Two years.
Yeah, two plus, I thought so.
Okay, what was it like living in Japan, in Tokyo?
We lived in a hotel, which was the Daiichi, D-A-I-I-T-I, or Daiichi, which was the way it was pronounced.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they moved the headquarters to Hawaii. Hated to leave. Tokyo, downtown Tokyo.
Let's not leave Tokyo yet.
Okay.
You were living in this, well, I can't pronounce it, you did. But did you get out around in the city
everywhere,
or the country much?
Everywhere. Mm-hmm. There, you know, it was like New York City.
Just a big city.
Railroads and, you know, trains and,
mm-hmm.
and I felt the hit ball.
Downtown Tokyo.
Downtown Tokyo, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and
you did enjoy it then.
Oh my, yes.
Okay.
I learned all the GI.
Did you have an apartment, or did you eat with the mess?
That was we just had rooms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a hotel.
So your food was prepared
yes.
for you,
uh-huh.
and all your laundry and everything
yes.
was done
everything
for you.
Was done, yeah.
That's a nice living, isn't it?
Oh, it was delightful.
Yeah.
I fell into all these good things, really.
Very nice. And traveled a lot there in Japan?
Oh, yes. The railroad station was within, 10 minutes walk.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And everywhere. And we still had all the military facilities, all the recreation facilities that had been there during World War II.
Oh.
See, they never let go of it.
So what kind of recreation was there then?
Well, everything. All this Army, Air Force, Navy, and...
Okay.
Just available. And I took advantage of it.
Well, that's good that you could have a nice time.
And
what was your...
I took off-duty education courses at the colleges because that was part of the program.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any interaction with the Japanese people while you were there?
I had maids, or, you know,
mm-hmm.
cleaning ladies and so forth
mm-hmm.
that were Japanese. And they were, of course, they'd been screened, thoroughly screened.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So really had a good
That was a pleasant
mm-hmm.
relationship then.
Yeah.
Then you said about a little over two years later, you went to Honolulu,
yeah.
or to Hawaii, which...
Hawaii, yeah.
With Hawaii. The whole headquarters was moved
yeah,
in it?
So, yes, we hated to leave Tokyo. No, wait a minute, I didn't. I went.
You were in the advance party?
Yeah.
For the relocation
That's
of
That's right,
the
relocation of Far East Air Force.
Okay.
Yeah. Unfortunately, in Hawaii,
Well, most people don't say that about going to Hawaii.
But I was not in a position to really take advantage
of. How long were you there?
Three plus years.
No.
In Hawaii.
Not in Hawaii.
In Tokyo.
You were...
Oh, yeah.
You were in transition.
Yeah.
In Hawaii.
In Hawaii. When the headquarters was moving... No, wait a minute. Tokyo, I was in transition. Mm-hmm. They moved the headquarters to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. But the length of duty at that time for you with the headquarters unit was down to like 4 months?
Yeah, 4 or 5 months.
Mm-hmm. And they...
And then what were you doing during that 4 or 5 months?
I was enlisted in public information, in the boss's PIO.
Mm-hmm. You were still in public information mm-hmm. then?
Yeah.
Okay. And?
I went to OCS and...
No, yeah, no Pierre, women. You're done. You're not. 57.
Okay. Yeah, okay, 57. Okay. I was assigned to Lackland.
Okay.
Squadron command. For the training squadron.
What was it like moving from Hawaii to Texas?
I hated to leave Hawaii. I hated to leave Japan, to go then, to Hawaii. I hated to leave.
Well, it's great that you can grow to like a place so much that then it's sad to leave it. It's a lot better that than,
well, that's right.
Hoop-de-doo, I'm getting away from here.
Yeah, I was always flexible.
Yeah. So when you came to Lackland then, were you still in public information then?
No. I went to Lackland to go to OCS.
No.
Wait a minute.
Lackland, squadron commander.
Yeah, I was squadron commander. Was squadron commander.
What does that mean? I've never been in the military, so.
Oh, okay.
I have to be dumb about
all these. The enlisted women were assigned, and this went back to World War II, were assigned to a woman commander.
Oh, that's for all the enlisted women in the Air Force? And most of them went to Lackland then?
Well, that was the training, basic training.
Was that WAFS, women in the Air Force?
It was as soon as the Air Force separated from the Army. Before that, there were WAC and then the WAAC and then WAC.
Okay, so you were their commander then, and for all these young women coming in.
Yes.
And did you do training yourself, or were you supervising the trainers?
The enlisted trainers,
mm-hmm,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that was a heavy job.
Yes, I guess so.
Yeah. And was that an interesting job for you?
Oh, yes. I had tried to learn and keep up with off-duty education the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Were there special problems when you, in those early days, when women weren't necessarily a part of the military culture?
Well, they were by the time they separated the services. Okay. When they separated the services, then we were...
Women were more common.
Yeah.
And we just had a comment from another interviewee about having been discriminated against because she was a woman in a new position, a new area. Did you face that at all?
No. Yeah. I guess I was lucky.
Good.
I had good bosses.
Good.
I had fantastic bosses. A major who was in during World War II, who was a newspaper man, and the one that recommended me to Pearl CS was a lieutenant colonel who had been in public relations.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that you were in Vietnam and in some interesting situations there.
Yeah.
When did that, did you volunteer to go there?
Yes, I did. Yes, I had to go somewhere. I kept volunteering for Europe and I never got it.
What year was that?
Let's see.
or here done.
No, that's Vietnam, 67.
That's
1967.
Okay. October 67.
Okay. And what were you doing there then?
Let's see. I had been a squadron commander, and then I got promoted. And so I was in administration.
Personnel services,
okay.
Okay, we can leave her this whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And we'll put that all together in your packet. But it's nice to have your voice in telling us how you saw things at that time. That's part of what this is all about, Barbara, getting that down. So how was your experience? Vietnam was a pretty horrendous situation. How was your experience there? Tell us about it.
Well, again, we lived in a hotel, what had been a hotel. And the bad part was when I was a shift worker and had to walk from... I didn't have enough rank to have my own transportation, so I had to walk to the headquarters. And if it was time for them to drop some bombs, I just hid in doorways and so forth that night. It was weird, unique.
And there was bombing going on most of the time there?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And I was...
You must have been scared.
Oh, no.
No?
I felt, boy, if it's going to hit me, it's going to hit me. Don't worry about it. Or I wouldn't have done all this in the first place.
But it was difficult to go through.
Not really, because in the first place I wanted to be there.
Okay, you volunteered to go.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. We had to be volunteers.
And they needed you there.
Yeah. And let's say after Vietnam.
Well, let's not leave Vietnam yet.
We don't
want
to leave Vietnam yet.
It seems because there's so much in our movies and papers and all about Vietnam still. Did it affect, while you were there, did it affect any your idea of the war? Of war?
Oh, yes. I never was fond of the war from World War II. Blackouts and so forth. And the same thing went on. But, you're there.
Do what you do.
The rest of it.
That's
my philosophy, I guess. Okay, what do we want to do? No, the Tet Offensive.
Maybe interesting Tet.
I've heard that you had something to say about the Tet Offensive.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, okay. What I wrote back was my daily routine never got established after my first husband Glenn left.
What was Glenn doing there?
Glenn was in a newspaper.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Where was the place you were staying?
What was it called? That wasn't Daiichi.
No.
We had an apartment. That's right. We had an apartment. A small apartment in Vietnam, or in Saigon. And when the war started, they canceled all the visas for the newspaper people who had been there any length of time. Of course, they changed it later on, but that was long after the Tet Offensive. We were then, after that time, restricted to the base.
Right. When that happened, where were you?
In downtown, Saigon. They canceled Glenn's visa. And And then I was assigned to a billet, shall we say. And then restricted.
But he had to leave.
He had to leave Vietnam.
And she was in an apartment when Tet happened.
When Tet happened.
Okay.
How long were you there?
After he left?
No, after Tet, in the apartment.
I can't remember. Not very long.
You said 3 days and you were running out of food.
Yeah, we were running out of food and water. Water was very important because we had to get bottled water and it was no longer available. And I have this all written down.
Okay, good. We'll include that in our material.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now we were restricted to the base.
Okay.
And with the curfew.
Mm-hmm.
And had only 5 hours a day to do shopping and necessary errands.
Mm-hmm.
All stores and shops were closed, and President Chu declared a martial law. And on the morning of the 31st, I turned on the radio, which was Armed Forces Vietnam Network, to be told about the attack on our embassy and U.S. bases, and heard that all military personnel would have to remain where they were until further notice.
Mm.
Couldn't even go to work. At this point, it was sort of like a no school today announcement. So we had nothing to do but stay there and sleep and eat within the facility. But it was not funny very long.
No.
And the radio announcements over the Armed Forces Network were stay inside. There was nobody to...
Mm-hmm. Not safe.
Yeah, it wasn't safe. Nobody to guard us, so we stayed there. And at the time, three civilian women were shot by being curious and leaving their facility.
Americans?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one was on the roof of an American-occupied hotel. One was looking out of a window, and the other was peering around the building, not far from our apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Our apartment was on the main road, Cong Li.
Mm-hmm.
To from Saigon to the base.
Mm-hmm.
10 blocks from the American Embassy building. That afternoon I watched the beautiful new Cobra helicopters strafing, well, I won't say strafing the hell out of something in the slum area 3 blocks from the apartment we were in. And I stood inside the living room and got a good view of where the action was. There was nothing but the noise of war. The sky was full of aircraft, helicopters, A-1Es and C-130s, and jets, and all types of jets. And they circled over the house where the apartment was. And the noise the Cobras made when they released their rockets is really unique, fantastic. And later that night, the sky was full of flares, about 5 times the number we used to see most every night. Artillery fire was continuous, and F-100s and C-47 Dragon ships kept up. We didn't get much sleep. All this only a few blocks from the house. The second day and night brought repetition of the early assaults, and I could hear Viet Cong fire very near the house. Tanks moved up Cong Li, that's the street where the apartment was, on the way to the base. Um, On the third day, the radio informed us, that's Armed Forces Radio still, informed us we could go to work if we had transportation. If not, we were told to wait until someone picked us up. The street outside was quiet by then, and I packed some things and managed to flag a ride. I stood out in the middle of the street and flagged a ride on a military vehicle in my uniform, which was their major at the time, and daylight, they just had to stop and let them give me a ride. On February 31st, I got back to the apartment and found that our maid hadn't come back from her Tet holiday. No bus service, and we were forbidden to use taxis. So I managed to catch a ride back to the base. Unfortunately, the indications are that we expect to continue. This was a letter I wrote. We could expect continued communist activity for some time. When I returned to our apartment several weeks later to collect my belongings, everything was just as I left it. Nothing disturbed, nothing taken.
That's amazing.
It is. They're amazing people.
Did you go back?